Joe, math is complicated. The show It's Complicated was complicated. The song Complicated by Avril Lavigne, ironically, not that complicated. You know that's right. It's season 4, episode 11 of this podcast and of Psych, and it starts right about now.
I've heard it both ways.
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 And welcome back to I've Heard It Both Ways. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, riding shotgun in the blueberry with me, as always, is my partner in crime, Shody B. Shody, how's it going?
Money in the bank. Shody, buy you a drink. I love it.
I literally just came up with that. Yeah, it's the first thing that popped out of my mouth. After I spilled White Claw all over my lap, you know, so we're firing on all cylinders tonight, baby.
Let's do it, man. I am pumped up for this one. This is an episode I didn't know if I loved, and after watching it, I still don't know if I necessarily love it, but it had some of the funniest shit of the season.
Yeah, I forget what I gave it for a grade. Okay, there it is. This is an episode that I remember mostly for two reasons, or four reasons.
Come on, Joe. It's a family program.
It's a family program. So this is not an episode I rewatch a ton because I think... So we'll tell the people what it is. Season 4, episode 11, Thrill Seekers and Hellraisers. And it's funnier than I remember, but it's not one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind it. The crime, meh. I like the chemistry of everybody in the show. I didn't even pick up that Ruby and the guy who winds up being the killer are married in real life. I forgot he was in this episode. That's the guy from Shameless.
Oh,
so they are a real life boyfriend and girlfriend. So that was kind of cool. But I love Ruby, even though she's not like the most dynamic actress we've ever seen on the show. And then the Sean Gus stuff in this is top tier. It's fucking great.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. The Sean Gus stuff is absolutely fantastic. And... This is the second episode this season we've gotten a WWE superstar. So before we dive too deep into it, William, why don't you remind the people of our process?
Well, of course, it starts with the holla and then ends with the creamsicle. And then at the time in between, little Thundercats ho. I can't believe I messed that up.
Yeah.
My process was a little interrupted, but
yeah,
you know,
two weeks off, baby. You know, we're grinding back in, you know,
back in the saddle. But let's start with a holla and probably the worst Henry hair flashback we've seen to date. It was bad.
It was thin and wispy. Right? it was just there.
And he looks so weathered.
He looked very weathered, but. The cold open, I don't know. There was a little bit of humor here. Not the best cold open, but what I love, it sets up the premise of Henry's in the house and he sees what looks like a boy flying, you know, dropping off the roof, right, you know, right through the window there. And he goes outside and Sean and Gus are testing crash test dummies for paragliding or whatever stunt it is.
Base jumping, I believe.
Base jumping. And, you know, we get like just classic Sean and Henry here where like Sean, like, what's the big deal? And Henry's like, are you fucking stupid? But the best part was little Gus going, and the camera pans over to his thing and it's just like all crippled and crumbled on the ground. He goes, we've made improvements since then.
My favorite, though, is when he was like, well, I don't live in your house anymore. Yeah. I don't have to play by your rules. And Henry, well, when you're 30, which, like, at the first pass, I, like, didn't realize that he was, like, anticipating his son being so bad at life, he was going to have to live there until he was 30.
Right. So there was some good little comedy there. But before we dive too far into it, the synopsis for this episode, Sean accuses Gus's new girlfriend of murder when a river rafting trip turns up a dead body in the process. And we get not one, but two knockout standout guest stars. Billy, tell the people who these ladies are.
Well, first, I just want to say that synopsis is wrong. Sean never accuses her of murder. She's just accused of being a part of the cover-up. So,
Facts. Yeah, good pickup, William.
We have Stacy Keebler, of course. She is playing the flirtatious Spitfire Jessica Martino. We know her from WWE, pretty much. She dated George Clooney. She's all legs. She knows how to use them. Then Sarah Shahai, I would say.
Yeah.
She plays the vivacious Ruby. She is fantastic. She was in Black Adam, Chicago Fire, and Person of Interest. And let me tell you, she is a person of interest.
Oh, baby. I never watched Chicago, but I watched the shit out of Person of Interest. Great show. And it'll be interesting to see what her character will be in Black Adam. But, she's just a perfect dollop of a woman. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, and this is not her, I thought she did her part just well. But she portrayed a person that I find very irritating, and that's the one-upper. She was a one-upper in this episode a lot, but it worked to the show's comedy. I thought her, Gus, and Sean all played well off each other, but just the character of the one-upper always just goes right up my chute.
Yeah, and I thought she was really good in the first scene and then kind of went downhill in the acting skill afterwards. I thought the chemistry she had with Sean right off the bat was pretty good, and Henry was pretty good, did her job, but like she definitely wasn't one of the all-time, especially female guest stars that they've had.
They're standouts for other reasons, but yeah, they did their just fine. And I want to circle it back to the cold open here, because I don't want to forget this here. So we're talking about base jumping, right? And Sean and Gus in the cold open are testing their guys. They're falling from a high place from the roof onto the ground. This is on the USA Network. The WWE is on the USA Network. Henry comes out of the house and he says, "What in the blue blazes is going on?" How did the blue blazer go out?
Yeah.
He fell from a tremendous height. Like, I just feel like someone should have caught that and maybe used a different phrase there. I know blue blazers.
I'm a bigger wrestling fan, I think, than you.
Yep.
And we're about on the psych fans. And that never crossed my mind.
It never crossed my mind. I don't know why I caught it until the last time I watched it. Right. Because
there is a wrestler on this episode, too.
I've seen this episode a ton of times. And I think I never caught up on it. And like, yeah, blue blazes is a turn of phrase. But you maybe think when you're dealing with this, like, it seems a little on the nose. I know it's probably sheer coincidence, but I picked up on it for the first time and I went, eh.
Yeah.
Ah.
I'll give it to you.
Yeah. You know? So I just wanted to point that out because I thought that was a little like, oh.
I don't think it was at all intentional.
No, I don't think so either. But, it was known enough that maybe someone should have picked up on I don't expect Steve Franks to know that, but maybe someone somewhere would have known. Anyways, that's just me. I picked up on that. Made me go,
non-fun haver doc.
yeah. I remember where I was when that happened too. I was at my parents' house, and we had all pooled our money together. We had given the money to my mom. We ordered it on pay-per-view, and this was back in the day, Billy, right? Of dial-up internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, it goes black. We have no idea what goes on. So we fucking run upstairs to the computer. It takes 10 minutes to load up the internet, trying to find a friggin' chat board, a message board, and to find out what the hell happened. And then it all just goes to it all went to shit, but. Anyways, we digress. Bringing it back to psych, the overall story here, this may be one of the better opens that we've had in psych, especially this season, where they're at the bunny store. We sort of get a little hint of this. Was it last episode with the kitty cats? This episode, we're here with the rabbits, and they're petting the bunnies, and they're just doing the whole bunny love. And, Gus and Sean are being Gus and Sean. And then Gus goes, "Oh, by the way, I have a secret girlfriend," and Sean is pissed.
Yeah, he's Gus set him up to have an intense adorability high so that he would be all out of whack when the new girl Ruby walked in. But Sean put the bunny down, even though it was quite strong and Colombian.
Yeah, this is some of their best back and forth, and this is where Sean shies is silly, stupid moments like this. Where Gus tells him, I've got a secret girlfriend. And Sean just goes, you're dead to me. You brought me all the way down here to get me hopped up on Buddy Love so you could spring this on me so I wouldn't make a scene. You're right. I forgot. This conversation was about, boy, this bunny is strong. Must be Colombian. Like, he just, he's going in his diatribe and then just, like, forgets what he's talking about and then just goes into somewhere, you know, talks about the bunny. And the fact that he says, the way he says,
Colombian, must be
Colombian, was fucking perfect and hysterical.
Yeah, I loved it. And I also do love when, how do you know that this girl isn't trying to take you to the cleaners? Yeah. He's like, well, all my money is tied up in dressers and decorative pillows. Yeah. Fucking killer line.
So I thought, like, I think you hit this on the head, like, this scene with Ruby in the beginning, the chemistry between her and Sean and Gus was perfect. She was at her best in this scene. But we start to see that one upper aspect of thing where Sean's going to ask her he doesn't ask her the three riddles of the Sphinx, but he does start to interrogate her. And this is why Gus hadn't introduced them yet, because he wanted to make sure it was real. And he starts asking her questions and he asks her what's her favorite Magnum PI episode.
Well, she's not
being
a one upper in this scenario. She's just answering the questions.
Sorry, I forgot to hit fucking mute there. Jesus Christ. Rookie mode here. No, she's not being a one-upper, but she's like, she's giving you that aspect of like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm one of the dudes. And so she goes, this is my favorite episode. No,
well, she's being asked, Joe.
Yeah, I know. It rubbed me the wrong way. It's just me. It's just me. I'm having a bad day, Billy.
But she didn't watch this today.
I know, but I'm taking it out.
Fair enough. Take it down. That's all right.
It's not fair. But I think that's the character that we're starting to get. Like, she is, you know, she is a good foil for Sean because she's kind of going toe-to-toe with him here. And that's when we see sort of Sean at his best because that's when he really, like, starts to get a little sideways. But he actually, I thought, kept it fairly reined in for the most part. Because first time watch this, I really expected Sean to really, really go out of his way to like get in between Gus and Ruby here. And he does to an extent, but you know, I actually think at one point, you know, and maybe this was because of Henry's, you know, tutelage here, he kind of like, you know, backs off a little bit and starts to, you know, let those two have their thing. And then the episode kind of takes us where the episode goes.
Yeah. And it's funny how many times already that he's already either playing from behind or playing to someone who's his equal, or in this case, again, playing the straight man. Like, there's not, like, they do such a good job of not giving you just straight Sean episodes. And there's a lot of them that are straight Sean episodes, probably the majority of them, but they mix in these different kind of situations for the main character that a lot of shows are too lazy to do.
Yeah, and I think they figured it out too. Like, there's a really successful formula there when, you know, or maybe like if we write this type of story, James can really knock it out of the park because he does it so well, right? When we get to your favorite episode next season with Declan Rand, right? Oh, yeah. And, you know, the episodes where, you know, Lassie's on top, or maybe Gus is getting a little bit of shine, or whatever it may be. Viagra Falls. We gotta be the same fruit. that's when he's at his best, because he's really gotta like dig deep, right? And so we don't get the full extent of that here. We get a little bit, but I do think that they played well off each other.
Oh, 100%.
And so this is what we get now, is we're still kind of getting Sean trying to vet Ruby. So, like, he's like, well, let's go meet the rest of your friends. And she's like, well, no, I've got plans, you know? It's like, okay, respect that. People have plans, but not Sean. Sean wants to catch her off guard, really wants to make sure, you know, she's not another Mira, which is another thing I loved about this episode, too, was that there was a couple of callbacks to previous episodes, right? So they call back to the Mira episode. So they go down, they find Ruby where she's at with her friends. They don't know what they're up to, but they crash the party, and we get a little bit more comedy here.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily love this part of the story, only for the fact that if I'm meeting my friend's girlfriend, I'm several steps away, even in my mind, from finding out what her fucking friends are like. That's my only, like, I wouldn't, like, I want to meet the girlfriend, and, you know, it could be a year before you actually meet the whole group of friends. So that seemed like a bit of a stretch, but they got to get into the story somehow. This is how they do it. It's a pretty good setup because you realize that they're a close-knit group of friends, you know, some guys, some girls, and we think they're going on a relaxing river ride or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, wow, we didn't know you guys were extreme.
Yeah.
And and what I loved about this, too, is that Sean and Gus didn't pick up on it until someone handed Sean a whistle, you know, halfway through the river raft. And
he picks it up when he starts, like, seeing it getting faster. And then he's like, are we on a flight path?
Sorry, I'm having a coughing fit. That's right. That's right. And so when they realize what's going on, I love Sean and Gus when they're freaked out because they just start screaming. And you can see it was like some good action here. But one of the things I love about this show is that the budget for special effects is like mediocre at best. So some of the green screen work here is a little wonky. And I love it. I absolutely love it because it's not like bad. We're like, oh, God. But it's not like super cheesy either. It's like sort of like that little balance in between where it's like, okay, I get it. They're trying. It's fun. And so we get this whole, you know, the river wild thing going on where they're crashing and banging, you know, through the rapids. And, you know, Sean and Gus are screaming, you know, in the high-pitched, you know, screams that they do. And then when they finally get to the end, one of the guys has gone missing.
But, like, there's a lot of really good comedy moments, too, while they're on this boat. You get the Derek bagging the big five, mouse, turtle, rat. That's fucking hilarious. And they're like, we're surprised you guys could really keep up with us. And Gus is like, oh, I was voted most well-liked and King of Howdy Day. Only time that's ever happened. Like, that shit fucking kills me. Some good shots of Stacy Keibler flirting with Sean. And then, like you said, they get into the rapids, Stu gets lost, and there's some good psychic kind of follow-ups here and, like, some details given. And I'm going to start paying more attention to this now when I watch all of these, because there is the key to the entire case happens on that boat. He finds out Stu is the most experienced, so that's why he had to have the certain seat on the raft, because Ruby saved it for him. You got the big buck hunting with Jessica and keys to her apartment. That I think might happen later, the keys to
the
apartment.
The keys to the apartment happens later with the rocket, but you find out that Derek
is romantically, a big game hunter. Yeah, and they were romantically entangled beforehand. So a lot of good nuggets that kind of spill out on that little boat ride.
Yeah. So, like, I think you said that the story, like the crime, was kind of meh. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was meh. I thought it was a little bit better than meh. You know, it was definitely believable. You know, I think some of the elements, you know, yeah, maybe, but like, I think overall, like the nuggets that we get here, I definitely play out towards the end. I think to me where it gets a little bit meh is I thought it was the ending was a little over the top, like the how and the why, right? Okay. That was pretty well conceived. But then at the end with with Derek and Ruby and Gus and the paragliding, that was a little, again, I'm not a fun haver, but no, like.
Not today.
But like, that's kind of where it went a little too silly for me, you know, at the end. But I did think it was a well-conceived plot, you know, like it made sense, like why they would want to, you know, do what they did, which we'll get into a little bit. And then sort of how it played out, like. It almost could have been the perfect crime, you know. But, you know, of course, someone gets a little too greedy and then boom. So after, you know, we don't know that anyone's dead yet. We just know that Stu is missing. You know, he fell off the raft somewhere. But Sean picked up all these really important clues that are going to come out later. And so we're back at the station and we find out that Stu and his business partner, had recently filed for bankruptcy. They're bad business people. And Sean is convinced that Ruby is somehow linked to Stu's disappearance.
Yeah, and they also took out $1 million life insurance policies on each other, right, which is obvious motivation from the get-go. And I don't know if we want to dive into this now, but to me, the funniest part of the entire episode happens here.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not?
Yeah. The Samson thing? That fucking every single time. The little orphan church mouse! Or Samson, like one of those. Or like, and then Gus goes, you mean like our Samson from the character of the Bible?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Let's see. Where did I have that written down? Let's do the whole thing.
Amazing.
Samson, the little orphan mouse who must find his way home to Wolverhampton. You know, and so like Sean just going off on this whole thing. And then the best part too was him like not knowing the Bible, like Samson, you know, and the Bible. And
Leviathan, do the right thing of it.
Right. And Sean and Gus goes, do you even know the Bible? And he just keeps going on and on. And it was just, this was 100% the funniest moment of the episode. I'm trying to find.
Sorry, I like it. To me, that's just like the only thing I think about when I think of this episode.
Well, I think of Keebler's ass, but that's you true. Know, that's
the Woody part. Woody, oh, when I say great. Samson, what do you think of? Vacuum that works in space.
Yes. Oh, I'm trying because I know I wrote it down.
We can come back to him. We can get back on track.
Yeah, we'll get back. We'll get this thing back on the fucking rails. But so now we're at Henry's house. And this is really where we get that sort of, you know, one-upper thing, you know, with Henry and Ruby going back and forth on the big fish stories and you know, like, this wasn't the best scene in the world, but it was important. What we did get from this scene was, you know, Sean is, you know, definitely like, you could tell he's a little jelly, a Gus,
oh, right? Yeah.
And he's jealous of Rubes, as he's wont to call her. And so Henry goes out to flip his world-class burgers. And Sean goes out there, and Henry actually is like, you know what? You know, you think you're doing Gus a favor, and most of the time you are, but I think you've got this one wrong. She's a good gal. She's good for Gus. He's happy, you know. And, you know, I love this quote here. Sean goes, you've been drinking. He goes,
how much have you had?
How much have you had? And he says, this is a great line. He says, more than a little. But less than enough or something like that, yeah. Right? And I thought that was just a great line. But we get a little turn here from Sean where he's like, okay, yeah, maybe I have been too hard on her. And then we cut back to inside, and Gus is sort of, you know, like as Gus is wont to do, you know, he blabs a little too much. And he goes, well, you know, Sean kind of had this crazy theory that you were in on Stu's disappearance. And then we actually get a bit of a bombshell here.
Yeah, because she's like, wow, he really is psychic.
Yeah.
So she has to admit to Gus. She puts him in the trust circle. You can't have a circle with two people. Probably the best quote of the fucking thing. Stupid. You can't have a circle with two people. So he has to keep it from Sean. And I like that Sean, when he comes back to talk to Gus before they have the Smiths lyric off, you get the little nugget of, you know, confesses to him that he's actually just jealous because he had something with an equally as good girl. He screwed it up, and then he can't tell that Gus is lying, and this is a nice little bit that carries over into the police station too.
Yeah, so we get back to the station, and Lassie's interrogating someone, and the guy was like, I didn't fucking do it, and like it's pretty obvious. And Sean's like, yeah, you know, he's got none of the tells. He's not lying, he's telling the truth. And then Sean just kind of looks over at Gus, and Gus is doing all the things that Sean just said the other guy wasn't doing. He goes, but you are, you know, hiding something. And even Lassie goes, yeah, yeah, he's hiding something. And then this is where, you know, we get the whole Samson thing, and Gus sort of reveals, you know, about Ruby, right, being in on it.
Yeah, because he's like, Gus, don't you actually have something to say? And then he bounces, right?
Yep, yep. And then we find out that Samson, the lovable Saint Bernard, has been found dead, but it looks like a hunting accident. So this is, you know, so Samson is Stu's business partner, right? So we find out that he's been found dead, and it was a hunting accident, and so this is how it comes into play later that little what seemed like a passing by, you know, innocent comment of, oh, yeah, you know, so-and-so is a big game hunter. And He's an expert. Excuse me. I'm dying tonight, apparently. COVID fucking 10.0. You know, so Samson and Stu, right, as we found out, right, had taken out $1 million life insurance loan. Now one of them is dead. So where the fuck is Stu? Because we haven't found Stu's, body yet. And so Sean thinks he knows where Stu is hiding from a clue that he gathered early on in the episode. So he has a vision. He tells the police where he thinks Stu is. They go there, and Stu is...
He's also dead. He's shot with the rifle again. And I think did we skip the scene where they're rock climbing? Where they get the little back and forth there?
Did we? I don't think so. I think that comes up after because...
You know, you're right. Yeah.
It comes up a little bit after. So they go, they find this little sort of RV in the woods, and, you know, they think that's where maybe Stu is. Cause at this point now Stu's the number one suspect. Maybe he killed Samson, but they get there. Stu's dead. And it appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. So this is sort of what I was talking about earlier. Like, I feel like the bits and pieces here, like, I think it was fairly well constructed. Maybe it went off the rail a bit here, maybe a little bit there. But, like, this idea that these business partners were in trouble, they took out life insurance on each other, one's found dead, and then the other one dies of a self-inflicted gunshot. Well, you could easily conceive that it was because of guilt. And, you know, like, I'm still really believing it at this point. Like, I'm still kind of enthralled because both these guys are dead. There's a third party. I'm still sort of trying to figure out who it is. And we get back to the station, and we get a little bit of a cat fight here between Rubes and Jessica.
Yeah, you find out that everything isn't copacetic between the group of friends here, and that Ruby thought that she was the only one that was told by Stu that he needed help and he needed to get out. But Stacy Keebler, Jessica Martino, she actually said, you know, you got to deal with your problems. So... they all knew that Stu was in trouble too. They just didn't decide to do anything about it. And then Ruby and Stacey Keebler get into a little back and forth thing. And we don't really get anything from the big game hunter, but he's also there.
Yeah. And what I loved about this is that Ruby and Jessica are kind of going back and forth. And I think, one of them said, don't make me, you know, go after her. I'll, you know, and then Sean just goes, make her try and make her. Yeah. Which I absolutely loved. And this is something I didn't write down here in the notes, but I wanted to ask you. We've been pretty much void of Chief Vic this season, have we not? We get a little snippet of her here, but we really haven't had a ton of Chief Vic.
She's in a little bit in Extradition British Columbia at the beginning. Yep. He Dead, she's a little bit involved with.
Yep.
I
feel like we didn't get a ton of Chief Vic here, like just a little bit. And I like her character. We definitely get more of her in the seasons to come, but I was like, not a ton of Chief Vic here, but I think next season we get a ton of her because we get Henry at the station and all that as well. But we get a little Woody here.
Oh yeah,
I love Woody and Woody. I love how Sean bribed Woody to get the information he needed by bringing him slippies.
your little toes must get cold in the block down here.
And so, you know, Sean just wants some of that sweet forensic evidence, and we find out that the caliber of hunting rifle is the same caliber comes from the same caliber gun that Jessica Martino owns. Yeah, and I love like what he's got. Like he does the whole Christian Bale, you know, Dark Knight Returns, you know, thing with the bullet holes and the different, like, one's human in head. A watermelon, right? One is, you know, in a brick. You know, so it's like, what does he say about the watermelon? He goes, oh, it's
perfectly similar. It's the human head or something.
Yeah, something like that. It was just like, it was perfect. This is what I love about Woody, too. Like,
Oakwood season, represents balsamwood.
Yeah, right. It's like, Woody's clearly a bit of a nut, but he's still fairly reined in.
Yeah, you know, and he's good at his job.
And he's competent and good at his job, but just as the seasons go, his incompetence just, you know, rises. And I still my two favorite Woody moments is from Last Night Gus, the whole episode, and then is it the Psych 2 movie where he's doing the Spanish doctor impersonation? Yeah. Oh, That is, like, to me, just classic Woody. Just it's one of my absolute favorite things. But this was important. So now, you know, this is where we get to the rock climbing wall. Because Gus is like, you know, Sean goes to Gus, we got to tell the cops. We got to tell the cops. You know, clearly, you know, there's something else going on here. Someone else is involved. And, you know, they get up there and Stacy Keibler, she's flirting on with Sean, telling her she's not wearing panties. Sean gets very intrigued by that. And then Derek swoops in and he goes, you know, I think you two would be good together. I still have the keys to her apartment if you want to get in. And then so this is sort of where Sean, you know, puts it all together. You know, he's like, wait a second, Derek has the keys to Jessica's apartment. Yeah,
see, this is what screwed me up, because the rock climbing scene actually happens all before that.
Does it? Yeah.
Yes, because then after he gets the slippers to Woody and they figure out, you know, what was shot, he goes upstairs and has the Woodchester, like, little vision in there with Lassie and Jules. And then they're like, okay, it's Jessica. And then Sean tells Ruby to stay away from Jessica, which is fine because they don't know that Derek's the killer at that moment.
That's right. Yep, I had it backwards. And so, and then once Sean hears that, oh, Derek has the keys to Jessica's place, this is where he puts it all together. So Sean has figured it out. But before we get the reveal, I think this part's a little silly, but I think the stuff leading up to it is actually really good. And so, like Sean, like you said, Sean had told Ruby to stay away from Jessica. Right? Jessica's now the prime suspect, which makes sense. Maybe there's a love triangle going on there, right? So that's believable. So we forward to a scene out in the open. Looks like, you know, it's Rubes and Derek. They're going to do some paragliding, and so as far as Ruby knows, her and Jessica are the only two people that knew of Stu's secret hideout, which Sean was able to kind of pick up, you know, through his, you know, psychic abilities. And so as they're getting ready to paraglide, Derek's GPS is out and he sees, Ruby sees that one of the saved locations on his GPS is Lone Pine, which was Stu's secret spot. And she goes, how did you know about that? And then this is where the reveal happens, right? The dun 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 moment. That classic trope where you, when someone's interrogating someone, right? They're pretending they don't know, but they say the name of the person or a place or a thing that shouldn't be known to anyone but the detective. And that's how they kind of get busted. So I always like that trope.
In Doctor Strange.
Yeah. And so this is where we find out that it was Derek. You know, he was the expert big game hunter, you know, which we learned very early on. He used the key. He used Jessica's key to sneak into her place, steal her rifle so that he could kill Stu to frame her. Like, so again, like there's all these like little elements, like trying to make it look like a suicide, killing the other guy, and then trying to frame Jessica. Like, you know, again, it's always these silly little mistakes that gets the killer caught. We've seen that, you know, Mita's murder, things like that, but it works. That's what these shows are all about. So it's like, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids. But I kind of liked how it played out. And so Derek was going to help Stu take out Samson, and then they were going to split the life insurance money. But Stu grew a conscience, and Derek said, fuck yo couch. I ain't going down for you. Kills him, tries to make it look like a suicide, and he's about to get away with it, but he made a simple mistake. And then this is sort of like where it got a little silly, because I get it, but I don't, because this is clearly something Gus wouldn't do.
I mean, if his girlfriend's life is on the line, I think we've seen him act heroically.
You think Gus would do this?
Yeah.
I mean, we do know he's got the grip strength.
Yeah,
right. And so it is heroic, Gus. I just thought this was just again, I'm a non-fun haver. It's my advanced age, Billy. You'll be hitting 40 soon, right? You'll understand. You'll get it when the day happens. I'll be there to console you and guide you through it, step by step. You and me,
day by day.
We will be the guys in Viagra Falls, right? Yep. that should be our Halloween outfit.
But, oh my God, the Velcro double easy steppers. It's a Magnani slip-on. I know my loafers. I'm going to apologize.
I'm not going to be Carl Weathers, but
no, we can both be whatever his name was.
Two Achilles heels, but yeah. So like, I thought overall, I like the story. I think it just that little bit at the end. Again, it doesn't take away. I'm just saying. Like, I always watch that and I go, okay,
all right. It's fun. They had a little budget. They fucking hired a paraglider. I never thought twice about it. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Higher stakes than normal.
And yeah, it was high stakes for sure.
And the way they explained it. So we're just going to say you muscled up his back, put him in a bear hug.
Yeah. Well, that was great. Yeah, that was. I always love when they do that. Like when they're totally scared out of their goddamn mind and they just.
They do the same thing and the same thing. Something happened about Mira.
Yeah. Right. So you'll pretend like this.
So what happened?
Yeah,
I tripped, knocked over the candle, set the sprinklers off. He tripped. It's like they always wind up like making Gus look pretty good. So yeah. I really do enjoy the ending of this episode. Overall, I didn't think it was the strongest. The writing in that final scene right there with you're dumb as a wildebeest. Like lightning running down your spine. I don't think it was the most well-crafted. So I don't know if I can give the fault of the actors there. But I still liked the drama, the stakes. Ruby was beautiful. And then even
she's
the ending.
She's a knockout. She really is.
And then the ending that you get with Gus. Saying that they were going to take a step back, make it mature. And then Sean's like, she wanted to end it. Of course, I was banked.
Which is great. Yeah, they went through a lot. And this is always a good trope. Like, Gus just not getting the girl. And I think that played out really well throughout the entire series, you know, until the very end. And I think they ruined it a bit in the third movie. We talked about that at length already, but like, I just love that aspect of Gus. Like, you know, it's going to take a very special woman for Gus because he's a very special guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's very eclectic. He needs that. And so like, he could never be with someone like Ruby, right? They're just, you know, complete opposites, but it worked. You know, and I thought their chemistry was great. Like, the acting wasn't top notch by any means, but they did work well with each other. So let's get into the Thundercats Ho, shall we, William? Oh, and talk about some of our favorite moments. So even though like I find her to be a one-upper, you know, in this scene, I did like Henry's. That was definitely a pivotal moment for the episode. You know, and I love drunk Henry, and he was speaking some real relationship truth here, and we get on a shot. So I put this on here because this was, again, like we're four and a half seasons in and we're still getting layers to these characters, which I really enjoyed.
I love when he's like, well, maybe we can make another girl, a clone of Ruby, you know, a little dim, not like slow or anything, but like, you know. That fucking killed me. Maybe like a little bit dim. Like that's
because we don't ever
fucking see, hysterical.
We don't ever see these characters drinking all that much on the show, and so they play it up very
well. I had a drunken revelations. Well, actually, it was my dad's revelation, but
I forgot about that. Like, not slow or anything.
But Mitch just, like a little dim. The way he says it too. You know, like a little dim.
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. We get the rock climbing scene. I mean, Keebs, you know, saying she's not wearing any underpants here, and we mentioned it before, but Derek's terrible innuendo. Like,
yeah, you can get in.
Like his acting he was barely in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't great, but that delivery.
Oh, it's the star of Reba right there. Are you kidding me?
And the look on his dumb face as he delivered it was perfect.
Yep, I love that guy. He's if you ever watch Shameless, he's the best character in Shameless.
So I've never watched Shameless. I know about, but I never watched Shameless. I never watched Reba either. But
He's tremendous. He's fucking hysterical.
Shameless is a show like my father-in-law loves it. And he would just tell me to watch it all the time. I think I would be infuriated by watching a show like Shameless. Just because
that's fun. Characters... the first few seasons.
Yeah. I think for me, I would just be like, get your fucking shit together. You know, like, I think, I don't know. I don't know if I'd enjoy that show like a lot of other people would. As you've seen today, I get a bit emotional.
Non-fun, yeah.
And I have zero fun. it's why I love Moon Knight so much. I hate fun. Sean and Gus's bickering was an all-time best in this episode. But Gus grew some balls.
Yeah.
Gus grew some balls in this episode. Don't worry, when Gus is scared, he can cling to something like a drowning cat.
That's fucking great. It's a great analogy too, because I don't know if you've ever tried to bathe a dog or a cat. They hold on for dear life.
Oh, it's terrifying because those fuckers will claw you, and they'll sink. They won't let go. And Gus, saves the day because a man saves a lady. So I did put this in my favorite moment because there were elements of it that were great, and there were some great lines here. You know. What really happened? I squeezed him so tight he passed out, and also my helmet smacked him in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, so, like, yeah, that, I think, like, I don't know, maybe just, there was some aspect of it, too, that kind of just makes me roll my eyes a little bit, but the way that it ends, you know, with him and Sean and that interaction we just talked about, like, that is top-notch.
Them in the pet store, and then them when Sean gets back from the chat with Henry. Those are the two best, like, dialogue-y scenes in this episode.
Yeah, because that opening, as we talked about, is
great.
It is great. I got that written down in the quotes here. I was able to find it, so we can hit on that in a second. Least favorable moments. So not that Keebler's ass. I wrote Keebler's ass equals tremendous. Keebler's acting equals woof.
Yeah, this wasn't the strongest acted episode of Psych that we've ever seen. Very little Lassie. Sean and Gus are their usual A-plus selves. And then everybody else.
Very little Chief Vic.
Yeah, not your swinging for the fences people that were out there. But, you know, it was still a Psych episode that I liked a lot.
So what I'm finding through this, because I think we've talked about this before, like, we've always felt like season 3, season 4, season 5, season 6, like, that's the prime. And then I think as we got through season 3, we're like, is season 3 as prime as we think it is? And I think agree that it is. And see, what I'm finding out about season 4 is, yep, it's prime, boom, wheelhouse Psych. But there's more just fun episodes than there are, like, like, I'll say, like, American Duos, for example. That's one I'll always go back to, right, as being, like, top-notch, top-tier. Like, so we've had this whole string of episodes this season where they're all kind of in the same place. Like, you could interchange any of these particular episodes.
Yeah, nothing really in any makes order. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, like, you could have this at, say, 5 and one of the other episodes at 9. And you and I could have them backwards and be like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, there was no real sequential storytelling order, just some, like, general character building. You know, once we get rid of Abigail, then, yeah, pretty much anything can happen anywhere. And then just to look ahead real quick, the next is a very Juliet episode. I've probably seen that. Maybe that's legit probably the episode I've seen the least in the entire series. So that would be interesting. But then I think Death is in the Air, Think Tank, The Head, The Tail, the whole damn episode, and Mr. Yin, that's a fucking murderer's row to close it out.
It really is. And I think I love Think Tank, and I think I underrate it sometimes.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
I just forget how good it is from just start to finish. Comedy, story, plot, like, everything about that episode is great, but also Death is in the Air. There's another episode.
Dude, Head to Tail is the whole damn episode. Is the one where we get Detective Dipstick.
Right, exactly.
We get Lassie being Sean.
Yeah, right. So we're outside of this next episode. Like, we're getting three like quintessential psych
four,
episodes.
Because the end is Mr. Ian Presents.
Well, yeah, but I never.
Oh,
I,
yeah,
I
quintessential never psych. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like the yin yang trilogy, to me, that's its own separate thing. That is psych at its absolute best. Nothing beats that. Except the only thing that comes close to me is the Santa Barbara Town part one and part two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And but those are in a different category. We're talking about just psych in its glory and its funness.
Yeah,
like
this is
these
it.
Are three episodes that are, you know, three of the next four episodes are right there because they give you all those elements that just make Psych the show that you and I love and that everyone else except for Goo loves so much.
Hmm?
We're gonna have to. What we're gonna have to do?
No, wait, no, I don't want him to watch it.
Nope. No, no, no. This is what we're gonna do. We're gonna fucking, you know, old school this. We're gonna rent a van. We're gonna kidnap him. We're gonna throw him in the van. We're gonna fucking tie him to a chair. We're gonna fucking make him just watch the entire fucking series over a weekend. We'll fucking pay for Batty to take Raffy away.
No. If you really want to get him, all you gotta do is either get Batty to watch it, or when Raffy's like 14, pay him to watch it with him.
Oh yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call. But so we've definitely got some great episodes coming up. But
yeah, let's put a bow on this one first. Yeah.
Yeah. Who you have as your favorite character?
I loved Gus. Gus was great. Yeah. I thought it was a really strong Gus episode. Could have went either way with the two mains, but you know, just a dynamite performance by him. I was begging.
Yeah.
The King of Howdy Day kills me. I love that.
I went Sean. I mean, I love that opening scene, but I almost put Woody here. Woody.
He was one of the first few good Woodies.
I'm very inclined to anytime Woody's in an episode to just make him my favorite character in that episode.
I know.
Because it's...
Because you're him.
Because I am... Well, sometimes I feel like I'm more Henry than anything these days. But, like, I love Woody. I just... To me, he's up there. He's got to be considered... He's a top 10 TV character of all time. I just love him.
I don't even think I would go that far.
This is something that... Because... He's so
a top 10 TV character of all time.
Well, I'm being a little hyperbilly right now.
Very.
A little hyperbilly. Okay. I just love him. I'm just trying to espouse my love for Woodrow. But some quotes here. So people say our intense love of bunnies is creepy at our age, but history will prove them to be heartless bastards. I can't believe the French actually eat these little guys.
They're not the only ones, actually.
I wasn't counting other rabbits. Like this back and forth between Sean and Gus and the buddies.
And also, Sean thinks everybody's a cannibal. He thinks birds eat birds too.
Yeah, right. He thinks bunnies eat bunnies. It was just so great. I love the fact that like you got these grown men, but like at their base, they're just little children. Like at the end of the day, they're just little, like they're giant man childs, but they're also like just like they're like Lenny, just these sensible, you know, like just I could attend the rabbits, just little kids. And that just it's a very endearing part of their character that I love. I mentioned the Sphinx thing, right? You asked one girl if she knew the riddle of the Sphinx, and she didn't. Thank you very much.
You only knew it because you saw that episode of Super Friends or whatever the hell it was. Let me explain. Lunch starts 10 minutes before dinner, or in which case we combine the two and have dinner. Then there's the dinner.
Yeah, I love this. Like, that's the other trope that I love in this show is just their obsession eating. With food and eating. It's perfect because that's, again, that's me, you know. Derek.
Miner, not a blender.
Yeah, which was great. And then... Jessica here is a bit of a free spirit, single, but not afraid to make the first move. How'd you know that? She tickled my ass. That was great. Absolutely fantastic. And then we get Samson, the tiny little orphan mouse who must find his way home to Wolverhampton.
Unbelievable. Like, and then this is probably your favorite line of the whole episode.
She was hot with legs that I could have climbed.
Yep.
Legit, I could climb because I am a tiny fat man, and she has legs up to the heavens, and I would climb them like Jack and the fucking Beanstalk.
I also think that's a line that you would say.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Bert always busted my balls because I'm saying broad. you know, yeah. and all that. Like I am an 80-year-old man trapped in a 40-year-old's body, because I tell you this, there's nothing more that I would love than to wear a Henry shirt, get a fedora, take a cruise, and play shuffleboard. To me, that's the American dream.
I pretty much did that the last time I did a cruise without a hat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I almost bought one on the cruise ship.
I want in on your bocce league. I will drive down.
Come on. They would love you. They would absolutely love you.
I think I would fit right in. just a curmudgeon, you know, playing some Italian lawn bowling. Like, that's my sport. I am in, right? So with that said, William, let's jump to the creamsicle. Let's bring this show home.
All right, let's land this plane here. Not a ton. We didn't have any really weird descriptions of lassies. Gus, don't be the new Meshach Taylor. No, I've heard it both ways. Ton of wordplay in this one, which was great. All those guys named like Ben-Hur and Prometheus. Prometheus is brought up a lot in this fucking show.
Yeah, right. And so this is where I put this, right? You've never read the Bible, have you? And he goes, psh, Genesis, Exorcist, Leviathan, do the right thing.
Yeah, right? Love it.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
I used this in the chat earlier, the re-repeated. Well, you can if you've already peated and flected.
Pineapple, I guess, one of the handholds on the climbing wall was a pineapple. Yeah. I didn't see it. I will go back, watch that scene, see if I could spot that. Henry, Father of the Year, a moment. So this is the quote. I've had more than a little, but less than enough. Like, great. That's a line I wanted to start using. That's
again, you. Yeah. it's another old man line. there was a shitload of obscure references. Magnum P.I., Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, the Mira callback, Chad Michael Murray. Like, that's like the fifth one already, I think.
Yeah.
And there's still probably more to come.
Oh, 100%.
It's like I'm walking into Final Destination, Sean. We walked out of Final Destination. Willow, Avril Lavigne was the best placed one, and a callback to Despero.
Yeah, which was great. So, like,
the show, it's complicated.
Right.
Math.
So, yeah, and by the way, we nailed the opening here. We had the points on time. You nailed your thing without any hesitation.
Try not to flex on it, Joe.
Well, I'm flexing for you, brother. It was tremendous. Like, we nailed it.
Yep.
Go back. If you're listening, find us on Twitter at the Pineapple Boys.
Twitter, Twitch, Facebook.
You Twitch, right? You're going to see us to appreciate us.
Yeah, I guess so.
One of us is handsome. One of us is husky. You know, we make it work. So how would you rate this one, William?
6.7. Like, it is obviously still passing, and you know, not, it's just not, you can't give it a 7.
So I was going to give it the same score, but Stacy Keebler and Ruby, you got to go 6.9.
Nice. Fair enough.
Nice. Right. Come on, son. What do we have coming up next week?
A very Juliet episode, episode 12. I'll be interested, because I do remember some parts. It's just, I feel like it takes like 25 minutes at the train station for like the.
Oh, yeah. The pacing in this episode, from what I remember, isn't great. I love that it's Jewel centric. I love her and I love her character, but I hate the dipshit that is her love interest.
Pasty, tall bastard.
Yeah, he stinks.
Reminds me of the love interest from Bridesmaids.
Yeah, dude just stinks.
Pasty.
But I'm interested to watch again, because I kind of remember the story and I kind of remember the twist to it, but like, all I can remember is Jules in that red dress. But that dipshit that is her love interest. Like, he just fucking stinks. So we have that coming up next week. I've already reached out to Jacob to start watching. Right. Get ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still, you know, still several weeks away, but I wanted to give him time to really take in the episodes so that hopefully he won't disappoint us with his rankings.
I'm telling you, I like him. I mean, we saw from the BSG, you kind of need the person on the Family Feud who's like, you know, some random ass answer that like only one other person said. You kind of need that.
I haven't had a chance yet to listen to PCP and listen to Rossi's defense. So I've got that queued up. I'll definitely listen to that tomorrow while I'm putzing around the house. That was, of course, talking about Logan. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they talked Logan is from the Dork and Mac and Goo live show discussing the top 25 comic book movies and where Rossi may or may not have had Logan ranked. So make sure to check out Billy and Rossi on the PCP.
And all of our people over at the Dork Shared Gooniverse on Facebook. That's where they can find you, stealing your gimmick.
here we go, baby.
So we got Change My Mind. They talk hockey equipment. TLDR talks books. Mac and Goo and Dork do movies and sometimes pop culture as well. Then we have the Streamers Back Cracker. Shine Time on Twitch, and then Davey and Keith are tweeting over on the YouTubes for Dork.
Yeah, and Fryer and I are talking books. We had a great interview this week with Sean Lewis. We've had him on the show numerous times. He was talking a new indie comic book, but I was just trying to, I was stealing your bit, but I wanted to pump your tires a little bit, PCP's tires, because this is going to be a great, I want to listen to this episode.
It was fun.
I love you guys and all that. So check everyone out there at the DSG Facebook page and follow us all on Twitter. So, William, until next week, my friend, wait for it.
Frank says hi.
And click, and we wait